Welcome back, everybody, to Source Material. I am your host, Jesse Starcher, and tonight we continue with our third and final part of our coverage of the 12-issue Batman story arc that was released in 2002 and 2003, Hush. The last issue we covered had a two-part stunner of an ending. First, after being summarily beaten soundly by the Batman, Joker was once again put in Arkham Asylum. However, his attorney showed up and has now gotten the Joker released free on bail. Who would do such a thing? Surprisingly, it was the now whole Harvey Dent. Also, Batman finally removed his mask to Catwoman, allowing her to see his true identity and attempting to take a significant step forward in establishing a trustworthy relationship between the two. The evil Hush is still on the loose, playing mind games with Batman. Guests this evening are Jason Teasley of the From the Cheap Seats podcast and the Screaming Boy podcast's own Ronnie Adams. Don't forget to give that Rattlichin Broadcasting Network Facebook page a like to stay up on top of all the great podcasts that we have to offer. If you would like to follow me on Twitter, you can do so by finding me at Stiznarkey. Also, the Source Material Twitter is at SourceMatCast, and you can also find our YouTube videos on YouTube. Just search hashtag Source Material, and you can easily find and subscribe to our content there. Jason Teasley can be found at TurcoGlue822 on Twitter, and give some love to my buddy Ronnie Adams by liking the Screaming Boy podcast Facebook page, and also follow them at Screaming Boy PR, and look them up on YouTube as well, and check out some of the videos they have available there, and give them a like and subscribe. Batman continues to attempt to put the pieces together as to who this mystery villain is. We continue with Chapter 9 of Hush right now. All right, well, we'll go ahead. We're going to finish this out, chapters 9 through 12. So chapter 9, Batman, it's pretty much a Batman versus Ross, Ra's al Ghul. So it's Batman versus Ra's al Ghul here. He finds Ra's sword embedded in the Bat computer in the Bat cave. We also get a Catwoman versus Talia here. Batman tracks down Ra's al Ghul to try and find out, okay, hey, are you part of this? What's going on? Why are you messing with me? And we get a battle that pretty much ends with Batman shoving the sword through Ra's stomach. And of course, if anybody out there knows about Ra's as a character, he has this thing called the Lazarus Pit, which has these great healing properties, can basically bring somebody back from the dead or heal you if you're gravely injured. What we end up finding out here is that there's some ash from a Lazarus pit left as it's kind of a clue. And that kind of leads Batman to thinking that I'm going to pronounce it like 20 different ways. So just be prepared. He believes that race is how's this? We'll do Al Ghul.
We'll say Ra's al Ghul.
Ra's al Ghul. All right. He believes that Ra's is tied to it because, you're not just going to find this Lazarus pit ash laying around anywhere. But Ra's is steady saying, hey, it isn't me. But think about, and I'm going to quote this. He says, think about it. Who in your life would wish to come back from the dead? And that's kind of where we leave the chapter 9. We can talk about Catwoman getting her butt handed to her by Talia and one of her guards, who is on the brink of death. But luckily, Talia, who is a former lover of Batman, actually gets ready to leave and leave Catwoman in this, this life-endangered state, but ends up coming back and realizing that she can even sense the connection between Catwoman and Batman. And how strong it is. And Batman might actually find somebody that he could settle down with. All you kind of get this, you kind of get this vibe. So anyway, Talia says, hey, don't worry. I gave her some herbs. She's going to be okay. Even though she looks pretty beat up, she'll be fine. She's not going to die. All right. Chapter 10. Catwoman's going to stay in the Batcave, and she's hanging out there with Batman as he's getting sewed up. Robin shows up, who doesn't trust Catwoman as far as he can throw her. We get a bit of a battle between Robin and Catwoman, who obviously Catwoman's had enough. She's like, you know what? I don't need this. Hops on a bat bike, takes on off out of the Batcave. out into the streets of Gotham. Turns out this was the plan all along. Batman, he's trying to find out if he can trust her or not. Him and Robin both follow Catwoman, who ends up running into Catwoman ends up running into a Huntress, and Huntress is talking out of her mind. You know, she's just babbling all this nonsense and attacks Catwoman. So there's a bit of a fight between them. Batman shows up. You know, Catwoman's instantly mad because, you know, that he was following her this whole time. She figures that out. You know, there's a bit of a battle, and sure enough, Batman puts it together. Who else can put somebody in a crazy state of mind? None other than Scarecrow. He finds Scarecrow. He knows that Scarecrow is somehow part of this plan, this big plan to – let's talk about the plan real quick, because I don't know if we're connecting the dots right or not. But, Batman knows that somebody is out there that's messing with his life. And each one of these rogues that keep popping up, you know, now a friend of his was brought back into his life after this bat cable was cut, and now that friend is dead.
Everything's bat.
It is, too. We got bat cable. We got the Batmobile. But now his friend's dead.
Bat shark repellent.
But anyway, so Batman's putting it together that there's somebody out there that, you know, is putting all these things together that are just, you know, messing with his life. During the interrogation of Scarecrow, Scarecrow is, kind of going to give him another clue as to what, you know, who is potentially behind this when he gets knocked out by none other than a freaking, get this, Ronnie, Batarang. Hits him right in the head. Now, what in the world? Who's got a Batarang that's going to knock out
just about his entire rogue gallery? That was getting smacked in the head with him.
Batman turns and looks, standing above him with Robin as hostage is none other than Jason Todd. Oh, my goodness. Now, we're coming back to that here in a second because we've got Chapter 11 to go over. And I kind of want to stop at the end of Chapter 11 before we hit the finale, okay? So Chapter 11 hits. It's Batman versus Jason Todd. Oh, my gosh. Now, this is something that I can remember reading and going, this is unreal. I've told you guys in the past, we've talked about it on the podcast before, and Jason Todd's death affected me pretty greatly because that was one of the first comic books that I remember reading where a superhero death affected me a lot. Mm-hmm. Jason Todd coming back from the dead. This was one of those, okay, Gwen Stacy moments where I was like, okay, Gwen Stacy's dead. She's going to stay dead. Now here's Jason Todd standing there in front of him, and Batman and Jason Todd start fighting. What ends up happening through this great battle is that Batman deduces that this is not Jason Todd. As a matter of fact, he starts to realize that the way that Jason Todd is fighting is not the way that Jason Todd fought when he was alive. This was, Jason Todd was beat by the Joker and left bloody and dead. So what is going on here is the shock of seeing Jason Todd alive. Batman starts to realize this stuff has been done on purpose, but it just doesn't feel right. He realizes that the way Jason Todd is fighting is actually more like Dick Grayson. He starts to realize that the moves that he's using is like Dick Grayson. And so he finally puts it down and he has Jason Todd right there in his hands. And he says, you're not who you say you are. And sure enough, the face melts away and it's another one of Batman's rogues, Clayface. Clayface he's kind of like a body snatcher where he can kind of mimic you, whoever he gets a hold of, look exactly like them. And also almost like, what is it? The Marvel villain Taskmaster, where he can kind of do his, I don't want to say moves, but he can kind of mimic their actions as well. So again, we got another false lead, but we got another rogue here in front of us who is part of this elaborate game that kind of just melts away. Now, after the fight, Oracle finds another lead that goes to a guy by the name of Harold, who I have never, again, they call me DC Harold. Light for a reason. They call me DC Light for a reason because I don't know much about the DC universe, but Harold was somebody that I did not know of. So let's go ahead and see if I can get this right just from what I read. Harold is like the Punisher's microchip. He's a guy he brought into the Batcave to kind of help him out with computers, repair some things. But this guy was like a mute, and he was also kind of physically disfigured. So it turns out Harold is somehow involved in this whole plan. So Batman says, look, I've got to go meet. I've got to go find him, talk to him, see what's going on. Finds Harold. Turns out Harold, who was a mute, can now speak and is going, you know, kind of starts giving him a little bit of some more clues as to who this person was. But before, of course, he can reveal anything tremendously significant, he is shot in the head right in front of Batman, and Harold is dead. And of course, Batman turns at the end of the issue. There sits the bandaged villain who's been behind this the whole time. That is, I mean, if you look at this guy, it looks like the mummy, okay?
Yeah.
It's none other than Hush. So there we go. Chapters 9, 10, and 11. Jason Teasley, let's go ahead and start with you, man.
The Jason Todd cameo that Clayface done was great, because you actually think that through the Lazarus Pit, he has returned, which in Batman mythos, he actually is back, but via the Lazarus Pit. But the fact that they brought him back, and, you know, there's a little shade there that where Robin goes, well, how do you know it's not him? He said, well, they were smart enough to age him to the appropriate age that he would be now.
Yes. That gray streak in his hair.
Yeah, and he said that's one of the things, the key elements that revealed that it wasn't Jason, because the Lazarus Pit, you don't age. So he wouldn't have aged appropriately via the, you know, if he was brought back by the Lazarus Pit. So, and just the whole fight that they had was just really intriguing, and the build up to it and the culmination of it actually being Clayface was kind of a letdown. I mean, because I was like, I really hope this is Jason Todd.
Yeah.
That would be so great. But outside of that, this was, it just kind of plateaus until you get to the later panels in issue 11, where you find out that the Batcave was basically bugged. That's how this person got all this information. It kind of leaves a huge clue about who Hush actually is, because this guy had severe scarring and tissue and disfigurement, but then he also wasn't able to talk. So, I mean, I don't want to go ahead and spoil it, but it kind of, the second time reading through it, is these things I picked up on that I didn't pick up on the first time, is it's giving you clues to who the reveal is going to be.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you could say the good thing is as we hit issue 12, you know, it isn't much of a reveal, really, because it isn't much of a reveal, because these 11 issues, I'm totally wrong when I say that, these 11 issues leave you, when you first read them, you're like, oh, it's that guy. Oh, it's that guy. And then we're at issue 11, and it's Jason Todd that's behind us. You're like, oh, my gosh. I mean, there's the guy that Lazarus Pit knows, the Batcave, knows all the people that he's worked with. It kept you on edge every single.
And it's a perfect scapegoat, because you see that Jason Todd would have knowledge of the Joker, of Harley Quinn, of, you know, all these rogues that, and all these quirks that Batman have, all this information. When you see Jason Todd, you think he's behind everything, and then you find out it's Clayface. It's like, you know, it's the classic whodunit. It's, they give you red herring after red herring after red herring, and it's just building you up just for that culmination.
Well, Batman, he is the world's greatest detective, but he's kind of getting thrown off his game a little bit. Because somebody's messing with his history, his mind, his family, everybody he loves. So it was cool to see that, you know, with the whole Clayface thing too. It is like a classic whodunit, but the detective is too emotionally involved right now to really find out who actually done it.
Yeah, yeah. He's got to try and separate himself from his emotions. Mm-hmm. And when with chapter 12, we'll go ahead and get into that here. Chapter 12. It's titled, Teasley, did you say it was titled The End?
Yeah, it's titled.
Yeah, it is. You're right. Right there it is.
Yeah, The End.
The End. So chapter 12, we get our final battle, Batman versus Hush. Batman seems to be unconscious a lot. I'm just going to go ahead and put that out there.
He's getting knocked out a lot.
You want to talk about concussion protocol, Jason Teasley?
Yeah, I was getting ready to say maybe... if Roger Goodell had anything to say in Gotham, Batman wouldn't be participating in his nightly patrols.
Oh, man. Batman versus Hush happens. These guys are fighting back and forth. Hush is not your typical supervillain. This guy is, what, trench coat wearing? How would you describe Hush there, Teasley?
He kind of looks like who he reminded me of, and I know I'm going to get the reference wrong because it's an obscure Marvel character. It's the Tombstone.
Okay.
But bandit. I mean, just kind of a big, broad individual that looks like he's going to rely on brute force more than anything, and he's going to try to overpower you. But he does something that very, if any Batman villains, I can't think of any off the top of my head. He uses guns. That's something you don't really see in the Batman universe, is a lot of actual guns being used and a lot of, and he's just so malice about it. And when he goes toe-to-toe with Batman, Batman's got all this background, and you kind of think that you know that Batman's going to handle this easy, but it's not quite as easy as people expect.
He ends up getting, I think, knocked out.
Again.
Clearly.
Get your stuff together, Batman.
He's about to get killed, and luckily, Jim Gordon, not Jeff, Jim Gordon shows up with old One Face.
And the Rainbow Warrior.
Harvey Dent shows up as well, and they are stopping Hush in his place. Now, throughout the battle, it's plainly obvious that our villain here is actually Thomas Elliot. Mm-hmm. I don't know about you guys, but as I was reading this, I mean, up to probably the final bit where Hush is at here, I was like, okay, it's got to be somebody else. It's somebody else. It's got to be somebody else. So what ends up happening is Jim Gordon shows up, and so does Harvey Dent. They're trying to stop Hush, and Harvey Dent grabs Gordon's gun and puts two in Hush. I'm looking at the costume here. I don't know if you guys have it up in front of you here on YouTube, but I didn't realize that he actually had a freaking H. And he's actually wearing a costume. Oh, he has an H on his chest, and he's wearing a costume. I always thought he was just wearing the trench coat, and that was it. But he gets two put into him, and off of the docks he goes into the water. Batman wakes up, and he's like, wait a second. No, that can't be it. Jumps in after him, tries to go and save him. But he unfortunately is unable to find Hush / Thomas Elliot. And by the way, you thought that was Thomas Elliot in the alley? No, sir. As a matter of fact, that was Clayface. And guess who did the surgery to help good old Harvey Dent become Harvey Dent again? That was none other than Thomas Elliot. So Batman still got questions. And Batman starts to realize that this does not all of this could have been done just by Thomas Elliot alone. He knows that someone had to have been behind the scenes pulling strings. So he tries to put things together, and sure enough, he comes up with an answer. And we find out the actual person that was pulling all these strings, putting everything together. Teasley, I'll leave the honor to you, sir.
Edward Nigma.
The Riddler. Unbelievable.
Which makes a lot of sense because you see the vast array of rogues throughout this, but one of the most notable characters was missing, and nobody, and you never question it throughout the entire book. I mean, you see some of the big bad, you see the Joker, you see Harley, you see Clayface, Roz, you see Killer Croc, you see Catwoman, Poison Ivy. You never see the Riddler. And nobody ever questions it. Nobody says, well, you know, why is the Riddler not in here? And then you kind of find out because he was behind everything. He had everybody else doing his dirty work, and he was sitting back laughing about it.
I've always said I think the Riddler is a much better villain than people give him credit for. The fact that he was the one behind it, the one you least expect, because, I mean, let's be honest, he's the Riddler. I mean, his whole shtick is he leaves clues behind for you to follow. I mean, he's not really he's Edward Nigma. He's kind of he's the one that the cool villains pick on.
two of your other A-list villains that are synonymous with Batman are also missing from the story. You want to take a stab at who those are?
A-list that we haven't talked about. Ronnie, you got any guesses? I'm trying to think of some A-list villains.
You've got the A-list right here. I mean, you've got Joker, you've got Two-Face, Riddler, and even Catwoman, you know, in her day, was an A-list, you know, villain.
Penguin.
Penguin.
Penguin's
not in there.
Okay. Who else? Are we counting Freeze?
Yep.
Okay.
Because
Second stringer.
No, I'm talking about as in, if you talk Batman villains, you're going to get right off the top of the list. You're going to probably hear those Joker, Penguin, Freeze. Those are going to be three names out of the top five.
Okay.
No, it's going to be Joker, Penguin, Riddler.
I said top five. That's three. You're going to throw Freeze in.
I can see it. I can. Those two are, yeah, you're right. Those two are prominently missing from here.
I think that you could have used, especially Penguin being the, since he's the, he's a huge crime boss.
Mm-hmm.
I think you could have had him, you could have threw the red herring to Penguin before you even realized it was Riddler. You just had like the Riddler. And if you think back about it, like Ronnie pointed out, Riddler leaves clues. And there was clues left throughout the book, and when you read through it the second time, you're like, oh, well, yeah, here's a clue, and it keeps, but yet it doesn't veer you toward the Riddler, it veers you to another rogue of some sort. And he's kind of pissed, if I'm not mistaken, Riddler's kind of pissed off it took Batman so long to figure it out.
What I love about this is the fact that Riddler knows Batman's identity.
Yeah.
He's like, you know, he calls him Bruce right to his face. And Batman quickly turns around and decides, well, that's nothing to worry about. And I was like, what do you mean it's nothing to worry about? And then we figure out why. And that's because the Riddler values riddles so much.
The mystery.
Just like you said, the mystery of something that cannot be answered, or there's an answer to, but only one person knows what it is. And Batman calls him on it and says, look, he says, what good is a riddle when everybody knows the answer?
Yeah.
You're not going to tell anybody my identity. even going to think about it.
And the Riddler realizes that. And the Riddler's like,
son of a...
Okay.
Good point.
Like he goes, okay, because that's what he prides himself on, because he prides himself as being just as smart as Batman.
Uh-huh.
And it's, okay, I figured it out. I want to see if anybody else can. If not, that makes me the equal to the Batman.
Yeah.
And that's how he feels about it. And that's a lot of the backstory to the Riddler. And that goes... on how this is written, because like I said, like we've discussed, Riddler isn't a predominant villain. He's kind of the throwaway villain that everybody else like kind of looks down upon and stuff. Doesn't seem as a strong villain, when in all actuality, his intelligence is on par with Batman. He challenges Batman mentally.
Yeah.
That's his thing with Batman. That's his quirks. That's the rivalry that him and Batman have, is the intelligence. No, he's not a physical threat to Batman, but intellectually, he's either equal or superior than Batman.
When I think of Riddler, I don't think he's written right a lot of times, and I think they got it right in this one, because I agree he's every bit as much of an equal to Batman, you know, mentally. You know, he trips himself up with pride, but I think he's a, I don't know, but he's a well-known, so that's why I'm saying he's not a B-list or C-list or anything like that, and towards anybody, because when you ask somebody, you know, even somebody that's watched the show or anything like that, who's the top however many, you know, of course you're going to say Penguin, Joker, Riddler, and then it's kind of like, oh, who's, you know, who's after that, you know, Bane, and then maybe Mr. Freeze or whoever. I mean, he's no Calendar Man or anything like that, you know.
Yeah, I mean, he's not that bad, but he's
right. And but so he's but an A-lister, but
has a lot of mm-hmm. Nobody takes him serious.
Well, I mean,
he's campy the way he's written a lot of times.
Yeah, so I think this story did him a lot of justice.
I think the first point of this book is to obviously get us involved in a great whodunit mystery. Who is behind this? Who is Hush? Who's behind Hush? The good thing is we get some of those questions answered here. But the second thing that I believe is more prominent in this is the love story between Batman and Catwoman.
Mm-hmm.
So at the end, very end of this, at the end of, you know, at the end of issue 12, Batman and Catwoman meet up again, and we kind of get a little bit, I wouldn't say it's not very much of a happy ending, because Catwoman ends up, you know, looking like, gets real close to him, looks like she's going to kiss him, and then she says the word hush, and Batman immediately freaks out because, you know, I don't think she meant anything by it, but she just, he's like, why did you use that word? She freaks out, and there's the whole trust thing between Batman and Catwoman as she walks away feeling, you know, somewhat she's obviously upset about the way he responded to that. So there's a whole lot more that these two need to work out before things can actually go pretty smoothly. And that's kind of where we leave it. Batman and Catwoman kind of parting. I wouldn't say parting ways, just, you know, kind of walking away from each other. As to whether the relationship continues, I do not know. I didn't read much past this. Go ahead. What do you want to say, Ronnie?
I was just saying it's a doomed relationship no matter how you look at it.
I would say that there is no hope either.
It's the classic what if. Unknown, the jolted lovers that can never be together.
Yeah. So that's kind of where we leave things. Batman, you know, kind of brooding at, I don't know if that's the moon or the sun behind him, but either way, he looks scary. And that's the end of chapter 12. So let's go ahead. We'll get into final thoughts here.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like I said, this is probably my second favorite graphic novel of Batman, right behind Killing Joke, simply because it's a vast array of the Rhodes Gallery. It shows it's the Bruce Wayne humbled and shows him as a human and growing up. Shows a little bit about, and it introduces a great new character and somebody that has a personal, because a lot of the Batman villains don't have something personal with Bruce Wayne. It's Batman. But this is on a different level. This is the hatred for Bruce, not the hatred for Batman. And that steps up the game. That raises the bar a little bit. It's intriguing because you got somebody that's out there that knows Bruce's identity, because Bruce's identity is one of the best kept secrets. Like we said, it's not the Flash. It's not that he goes out and, you know, blasts it all over social media or something in today's standards, saying, hey, I'm Bruce Wayne, I'm Batman. It's classically secret identity. So somebody knowing that is got a leg up on not only Bruce, but Batman. You don't know what happened to Hush. He vanishes.
Yeah.
Or you come to find out later what happens to him, but he vanishes.
Yeah, Superman can't even find him. Superman tries to find him and believes that he might have been washed out to sea.
You don't get a conclusion to his story. It's left open-ended.
Yeah, we don't.
So mentally, that's going to mess with Bruce Wayne and Batman. He's not going to be the proper headspace. But I absolutely love the story, the way it was written, each panel brought you in, drew you into the story. It's very hard to put down. I recommend anybody to go out and buy it. I'll even sign a copy if they need it. I mean, just because I love the story that much. Don't ask me why I would sign it, but, you know.
I was going to say, did you write it?
You're going to sign it because you love it that much?
I'll sign it and just say, hey, this is my second favorite Batman book.
Lord.
I don't think it's going to help the resale value. I'm just putting that out there.
You never know. I could become like some.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Hey, I will tell you right now.
I may get bit by a radioactive spider tomorrow.
I have a comic book upstairs. One of the few issues that that occurred in the Death in the Family series. I did not own any of those issues, but I bought two, I think. It's one or two of those issues off of none other than one Chance Prophet.
Nice.
And I had him sign the inside of one of them. He looked at me and he goes, you want me to sign the inside? I said, yes, sir. I want you to sign the inside. And I ended up giving it to Kira because she was, this was a few years back. She's a big fan. Maybe I am too. You never know. But anyway, you never.
Mark.
Kayfabe.
I didn't call him Joey, just to let everybody know.
The secret identity.
Hush.
All right, well, guys, I'm going to let you guys wrap up.
All right, man.
Yeah, I have to get to bed. But like I said, I love coming on Source Material. I love talking comic books, especially Batman comic books with you two. If you enjoyed this episode, definitely go back and check me, Jesse, and Ronnie out talking Killing Joke. Very insightful. Me and Ronnie kind of debate the ending of it, as long with Jesse. And we bring up valid points, and it's a very insightful conversation. One of the few times I've ever been serious on a podcast, I think, was during that. So much that Ronnie even mentioned it, said, I don't think that I've ever seen you be that serious ever. The passion for the book came across on all three accounts, because we got all three different views of that book. Love to come back on and talk another graphic novel. I think our next one that I would like to be a part of is The Nightfall.
Nightfall.
I think we should do Nightfall. I think that would be a very...
That'd be fun.
Very fun. I think we could do the all three. It would take a while, but we could do all three books. Nightfall. I think it's Nightfall, Night...
Nights. Hold on. There's Night's End. I want to say Night's End, Nightfall, and crap. What is there one with Azrael?
There's one. There's one arc where, well, if anybody doesn't know, Nightfall is the famous arc where Bane breaks Bruce Wayne's back.
Yep.
And Azrael takes over the mantle of Batman.
Great stuff. Which I have not read everything in there. I've got a few select issues.
I've got the issues, and I've got all three trade paperbacks.
Nice.
So if you would at any time,
that's going to happen, Teasley. You'll be on, buddy.
If you would, once I get moved and settled in, if you would like to borrow them, you're not a very far drive away, and I'll be seeing you in about a month.
That's right, man. We're heading to Cleveland.
If you would like to borrow them, I could. If any time before then, I can run them up. And once you get done reading them, make a day trip up to visit and pick them back up.
All right, dude.
But it's always a pleasure, Ronnie. I look forward to
NightQuest. By the way, NightQuest was the other one.
Yeah, NightQuest. Being invited back to Screaming Boy, I hope that happens soon and the episode actually goes up.
Shut up.
But you guys have a nice evening. Everybody out there, don't look me up on Twitter because I probably won't answer you. Cheap Seats is on a hiatus because I just work too much and just bought a new house and trying to get something. But it will come back eventually.
Yes.
Even if we have to do a live Google Hangout for 8 hours as we drive to Cleveland, we will have a
Wow.
Oh, dear God.
Some of these data plans going up.
We're on hey, I'll bring the iPad and it won't be my data plan. It'll be the X's. So I really don't care.
Woo! And we're done.
And with that, I will sign off. Everybody have a good evening.
Hey, thanks for showing up, man.
Take it easy, man.
I appreciate being on here.
Take care of yourself.
Take it easy.
That's, ladies and gentlemen, is Jason Teasley. The reason for the season. The reason.
What?
The reason for the season of Batman. Hush. Now, here's the thing. I have Paula Abdul stuck in my head. And she has a song that's called Rush. Teasley. Let me call Teasley back because apparently Ronnie. I want to talk to Teasley. Ronnie, have you ever heard Rush?
I have.
By Paula Abdul?
I have.
The lyrics.
Why would you do that?
Hush, hush.
Why?
Oh, man. What do you, hey.
I just don't understand.
I do it for the fans. Okay, let's talk Hush here real quick. What do you think, man? What final thoughts, and then we'll kind of get into plugs or whatever. What do you got to say about Hush before we get to signing out of here?
I've always really liked the storyline, this arc. If you need this, I don't know if you can start there, but if you do need to start somewhere, that is a darn good place to start.
Yeah, you know, you want to tell somebody, hey, read this thing on its own, but there is a lot of history in this book. I mean, we're talking
you know, the Joker's running, yeah, where he goes through all that part of history. But the good thing is that they encapsulate that along with some new history that's never even been thought of up until Jeff Loeb put it to paper. So, yeah, saying that it's some place to start out when it comes to Batman, I would, you know, I could say it could be done.
Yeah.
I think it could be done. Anything else, man?
I'll tell you what, though, the artwork is spectacular. It blows me away. And it even has, you know, you could even, I think one time they even threw props out to how he drew Batman's boots.
Wow.
That it's not just the, yeah, it's not just the, he added life and realism to even that, right down to Batman's boots, because it's not the, what's the word I'm looking for? The costume boots, you know, that slip on and they almost look like cloth or rubber or something like that. These are combat boots with treads on the bottom that if you kick somebody in the face with them, it's going to hurt.
It's going to leave a mark.
Yeah. So
let me ask you here, man.
Yeah.
Jim Lee, mm-hmm, where's he place in your top artists? I mean, I don't know if you have a top artist, but I mean,
definitely in the top five.
Top five?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I always have a soft spot in my heart
for, oh, absolutely,
for, excuse me,
for him.
Yeah, oh, for, yeah, what he's done. Man,
easy now.
I'll tell you what, the yawning. I didn't sleep for nothing last night. yeah, he. I've always got a soft spot in my art for his heart. No, in my heart for his art.
Ooh.
Yeah. So I mean, it's always been. The image artist will always be up there, I think, top 10 for me.
Yeah. Alex Ross is going to be the first one.
Now, see, he's amazing. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
He is amazing. But I, for some reason, in my opinion, I just don't dig his stuff as much as a lot of other people do.
Well, that's just...
That's personal stuff. No, it's just personal stuff. I mean, I look at Hush, and I'm not looking at, oh crap, this is DC. I'm looking at Jim Lee take Batman to, like, you know, the nth level and make me enjoy it. And Jeff Loeb's story, yeah, I mean, this is a decent piece of writing. And my final thoughts here. It's a great book. Dude, Batman history encapsulated into, that was one of the best things about this book, is that Jeff, you know, touched on all of those important aspects of the life and times of Batman. Every person we looked at, you know, he was involved with Barbara Gordon. We've got a little bit of history on her in here. We got the new history with Thomas Elliott. We got the history between him and the Joker. Just all that great stuff was put in there. We had all the rhyme and reason as to why all these characters were involved in his life and how this new character could become a, you know, a blockbuster villain. Hush is now part of the Batman universe. There it is, fans. Our discussion of Hush has come to an end. I hope that you enjoyed our three-part coverage of this great Batman story arc. If you did, feel free to share it with someone that might enjoy it as well. Thanks to my guests Ronnie Adams and Jason Teasley for joining me for this story. It is always a pleasure to have both of them here on Source Material. Next week, it's time to get spooky as we get our third annual Halloween visit from our good friend Gavin Napier, who comes on to talk about a creepy four-issue story arc from Image titled Witch Doctor. So join us on Halloween for a good time. And until then, listeners, have a good one!